Hi. Good morning. I've gotten to know a lot of you over the last year and a half, which was when my family started attending C3. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Tabitha. How I got here today is kind of a strange story, because I think some of you are probably wondering. I received a somewhat cryptic email from Valerie back in March looking for a teacher who could trace the mother figure. Apparently, Kent responded to Valerie's email suggesting she contact me, so here I am. I'm not sure if I was supposed to recommend somebody else, but if you don't love it, you can blame Kent, okay? I'm the mother of four incredible and complicated humans, and as I thought about it, I realized that I've actually been thinking about what it means to be a mother a lot over the last 11 years. As I reflect on the past decade of my life, I realize that I've been wrestling with the question, is motherhood fulfilling? Maybe not the question you would normally want to ask about motherhood. I'd like to present the idea that mothering is a set of human qualities that's essential for all people to grow in their lives. And in order to do this, I'm going to tell you a couple of stories, share some of my own experiences, the experiences of other women, some myths, some poems, and some quotes. So I got to get moving. I'm going to start with the history of Mother's Day in the United States. Does anyone know the origins of Mother's Day? No? Up. Oh. Yes? You want to share? No? Okay. I'm going to go back. It started in 1914, but in the mid-1800s, there was an activist named Anna Reeves Jarvis, yes? Who started Mother's Work Day clubs. Their purpose was to work in their communities to improve health and sanitary conditions, because life was very hard in the 1800s. During the Civil War, Jarvis moved the clubs to declare a position of neutrality and to work toward not only caring for soldiers on both sides of the conflict, but to reconcile all communities torn apart by the split between the Union and the Confederate loyalties. The early U.S. Mother's Days, officially championed and started by Jarvis's daughter, were grounded in social activism and peace advocacy. They were rooted in the idea of women as social and political activists. And they were trying to benefit society as a whole rather than as individual contributors to the private lives of single families. I want to start here because I think this is a good gateway into the idea of mothering. I love this idea that while the men are at war, trying to decide who's right, fighting the enemy, there were a bunch of women who got together and said, "Can you see what's happening here? We are at home trying to keep the children alive, and this war is creating the worst possible conditions for thriving. All of our lives are connected, and this war is destroying our future." But how do you get to a place where you can see past the divisions? How do you become empathetic to your enemy? I'm going to start with the story of the old spider woman. In many indigenous traditions, the feminine face of God takes the form of a spider that weaves the world into being, affirming our mutual dependence with one another and the planet we share. The people of the Acoma Pueblo tribe believe that when the one who made the world created all that is, he left it unfinished. So he commissioned the old spider woman to complete creation. He entrusted her with baskets filled with the necessary ingredients, and she handed the baskets to her sisters, who were first blinded by the radiance of what was inside. Old Spider Woman taught her sisters the prayers to nurture life, and when they were finished praying, Old Spider Woman told her sisters to look in all directions before taking it upon themselves to rule over creation. Take a breath. Look in all directions before stepping up to mend the world. The essence of the Spider Woman lies in the truth of interconnectedness. We live in a web in which every link connects to every other link. I want to tell you next a Native American story from the Wabanaki people called Glooskap and the Baby. Glooskap was a mighty warrior with magical powers. He saved the world from an evil frog monster. He defeated giants, demons, witches. He had conquered all of his enemies, and he thought he was pretty great. One day, he boasted to an old woman that he was invincible. "I am so great and powerful. There is no one who can defeat me." The old woman laughed. She warned Glooskap not to be too certain. "There's one foe you've never faced," she told him. Glooskap demanded to see this mighty being, so the old woman went into the next room and brought back, what was it? A baby. Yes, a little baby. She set the baby on the floor, where he sat cooing and sucking his thumb, and Glooskap smiled at this silly prank. Why, this great foe was only a small child. "Baby," he said, "come to me now." But the baby just sat, cooing, drooling. Glooskap tried to charm the baby by imitating the beautiful song of a bird. The baby smiled, but he didn't move. Glooskap was not used to being treated in such a manner. He became angry and roared his command that the baby come to him. This made the baby cry. Glooskap recited the most powerful incantations he knew. He recited an incantation to banish demons and to raise the dead, but the baby continued to cry harder and harder. At last, Glooskap, the great and powerful warrior, had to admit defeat. He strode away, vanquished. The baby went back to cooing. Conquering foes in the outer world requires directness, aggression at times, boldness. Being with children requires something very different. Babies, young children, teenagers, they challenge our sense of control. The skills valued in professional life don't necessarily prepare us to mother. We need flexibility, emotional regulation, careful attunement to the people around us. These things are necessary for successful parenting. We can believe that the only way to approach life and its challenges is through control, determination, and self-focus. My kids ultimately don't care too much about my to-do list or whether I'm meeting my goals. And don't tell my kids, but ultimately, I will never control my children. They are their own people, and they will do what they want. I love the poem On Children by Khalil Gibran. Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for the souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you, for life goes not backward, nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children, as living arrows, are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he also loves the bow that is stable. The goal of parenting is ambiguous at best, and bending sounds, frankly, painful. Does anyone know the Greek myth of Demeter and Persephone? Mm-hmm. Some people are saying yes. I'm going to tell it to you quick. Persephone is picking flowers with her friends near a lake when suddenly the earth splits open and Hades, the god of the underworld, emerges and snatches her away, ferrying her down to the underworld, where she becomes his unwilling queen. Sensing something amiss, Persephone's mother, Demeter, calls her daughter's name, but to no avail. She only finds scattered petals floating on the lake's surface. Raging across the earth in search of her daughter, the goddess brings the first winter to mankind as punishment for Persephone's disappearance. Zeus, ultimately realizing that the world will perish if Demeter doesn't get her daughter back, eventually returns Persephone to her mother. But because Persephone mistakenly eats 6 pomegranate seeds, when she was in the underworld, she has to return to Hades for half of a year, forever. The story of Persephone is used to explain the cycle of the seasons. Fall and winter each year is understood to be the time when Persephone descends into the underworld. But the story is also about motherhood and the necessary pain of letting a child go so that she can fully be herself. I am not in control. So is motherhood fulfilling? I did not think motherhood through very clearly when I started. Now that I'm in it four times over, a goal is not getting any clearer. In fact, as my children get older, I think the joys and sorrows of parenting are only getting more complex. Those feelings are becoming more entwined and inseparable. Mothering is an act of continually being stretched to some new edge. Regularly, when I'm with my children, I can move from incredible monotony to deep laughter, to primal rage, to awe over the miracle of life, to sadness that time is slipping by, all within the span of a single day. I feel like a crazy person. For example, I do not want to clean up one more pee stain by the toilet. And it's going to happen, probably later today. Bless my son. But the pee stain means that I'm not spending $50 a month on diapers anymore. And when I think about how Liam is going to grow up and realize soon he won't need me to clean up after him, I mean, that's what I want, right? And tomorrow, Abby, my oldest kid, is going to turn 11. Exactly 11 years ago today, it was a Sunday. It was Mother's Day. I was 39 days and 6 weeks pregnant, and I couldn't stop thinking about how any second I could have a baby. I thought it would be very romantic to have a baby on Mother's Day. But that was the start of me losing control of my grand plans. The next day, on Abby's due date, I went to my doctor's office, and my doctor let me know that Abby's head was facing the wrong direction. She was flipped upside down, and so a scheduled C-section was made and had that afternoon. That was not how I thought my baby's birth would go. There was even some part of me that wondered for a time if I was even really a mom because of how Abby came out of my body. I didn't have control anymore. Abby was the most wonderful thing I had ever experienced. She was mine to love, to feed, to snuggle. She smelled so good. I would stare at her for hours. I remember pulling out my camera and trying to photograph and capture every piece of her beauty, which I failed at. It was impossible to document. It's like trying to capture the size of the Grand Canyon. The magnitude of her felt otherworldly. But it's just how beautiful the world actually is. I could just see it. I was embodying a piece of becoming a mother. Becoming a mother was also very difficult for me. For 24 hours a day, I was at the service of someone else, and it was excruciating. I was finding a new way to interact with the world, and the skills that old Glooskap was using in his story were of no use to me. On top of that, I was suddenly very sleep-deprived. And let us remember that under the Geneva Conventions, sleep deprivation is defined as torture. There have been times where I was so angry with my kids. I've lost my temper, and I've screamed at them, and I've seen them get scared. It's now become something of lore in our house that I slammed one of my kitchen cabinets so hard that I broke the glass and it shattered everywhere. The kids will still say, "Remember that time you broke the cabinet window?" Before Abby was born, I hadn't felt that level of frustration since I was a child myself, and I was fighting with my sisters. Being a mother made me feel bipolar. I was Glooskap, but I couldn't walk away from the baby. I want to start with Faye Weldon's quote that I put into the bulletin. "The greatest advantage of not having children must be that you can go on believing that you are a nice person." Once you have children, you realize how wars start. When I first read this quote, I smiled and I thought, ah, yes, children, they can fight. But I think this quote is actually about what happens to yourself after you have children. Without being able to rely on control and power, deep feelings can start to come to the surface. Some religious traditions acknowledge these feelings pretty openly. The Hindu goddess Durga is the protective mother of the universe. As such, she's willing to unleash her vengeance in order to combat forces that threaten peace and prosperity. Durga is depicted as a warrior woman with 8 hands carrying weapons of different kinds. Often, she's depicted as riding on a lion or a tiger. A tiger symbolizes unlimited power. The lion is a symbol of uncontrolled animalistic tendencies, such as anger, arrogance, selfishness, greed, jealousy, desire to harm others. Durga, sitting on a lion, reminds us to control these qualities so that we are not controlled by them. Lisa Marciano is an author and a Jungian analyst. She has this fantastic book on motherhood, and she says, "Motherhood may offer us one of the few places in our lives where we can see most clearly our own shadow, because it pushes us to such extreme feeling states. To understand how wars start, we must be aware of our capacity for violence and destruction. At an intellectual level, we may be aware that we are hypothetically capable of terrible things just by virtue of being human, but we may have never met those parts of ourselves. When I was about 34 and 3 kids in, my good friend and roommate from college told me that she wanted to have a baby. Although she'd had a few serious dating partners, she was single. But she told me she'd done everything else in her life. Why couldn't she have a baby too? I couldn't imagine raising a baby on my own. And maybe even more intriguing for me was, would it be as hard for her as it was for me? So I asked her if I could make a documentary about her journey, and she said yes. The film unfolded in all sorts of unsurprising ways. Eventually, I added 2 more mothers to my film, but the central tension that started everything didn't change. Why was becoming a mother so hard and so beautiful at the same time? I have another story for you. This is a Hindu myth called Lord Krishna Eats Mud. When the great god Krishna was a toddler, he lived with his foster mother, Yashoda, and his older brother, Balarama. One day, Balarama complained to his mother that Krishna was eating mud. Fearful for his safety, Yashoda took Krishna's hand and scolded him sternly. "Why have you been eating mud?" she asked him. Krishna looked up at her, his eyes wide with fear. When he denied eating any mud, Yashoda demanded that he open his mouth so that she could see. The boy opened his mouth wide, and his mother looked inside. There she saw the sun, the moon, and the stars. She saw the eternity of the earth with its mountains, lakes, and oceans. She saw all of creation, the universe, fire, the air, the swirling constellations. She saw the very fabric of time stretching out in all directions. After a moment, Krishna cast the divine power of illusion over his mother in the form of maternal affection. Her memory was immediately erased. She took little Krishna on her lap as her heart brimmed with intense love. Motherhood may be unique in its almost guaranteed ability to allow us to oscillate between the ordinary and the infinite, in a matter of seconds sometimes. The lessons of mothering do not stop there. The author Elizabeth Sohn says, "Making the decision to have a child, it is momentous. It is to decide forever to have your heart go walking around outside your body. Not longer was I no longer in control. Not only did I see the incredible and unconditional beauty of another human being, but now my own mental health and well-being is severely affected by this thing that I love and I'm not in control of. That is vulnerability at its finest. After Abby was born, I woke up every night for the first 3 months, convinced that she was trapped in the blankets of my bed. Now I worry when I back my car out of the garage. What if one of my kids is standing behind the vehicle? I think about all of the things that could happen to them when they walk around the block. I worry if they're eating enough fruits and vegetables. I worry about the pesticides that they may or may not be eating on said fruits and vegetables. The list goes on and is unique to each child and where they might be at any moment. I didn't worry like this before I had children. Thankfully, I've encountered very few difficult situations, but I know that's not true for all families. A tragedy might not have happened yesterday, but it could happen tomorrow. I have a dear friend, Lisa, who, when she was pregnant with her second baby, went in for her routine ultrasound at 20 weeks, halfway through her pregnancy. The 20-week ultrasound is supposed to be an exciting event. You finally catch a glimpse of the thing inside of you. You can count toes. You can find out if you're having a boy or girl. In Lisa's case, at some point during the ultrasound, the technician excused herself and went to get a doctor, which is never a good sign. Lisa was told that her daughter's abdomen and organs hadn't developed as they should have, and the doctors didn't expect the child to survive for long after birth. There was nothing that could be done. It was a worst-case scenario. Lisa, with her husband's full support, decided to carry her child to term. She had a C-section, a major abdominal surgery, and her daughter spent 33 minutes with her parents before leaving the world. The part that always gets me, as I remember it, is that the drugs the doctors gave to Lisa for the C-section made her terribly sick and tired. She'd given her daughter her whole body, physically, mentally, emotionally, for 37 weeks. And then she only had 33 minutes with the baby. And she was consumed by exhaustion and nausea. Is motherhood fulfilling? Is it worth it? Julian of Norwich was a 14th century Christian mystic and a medieval anchoress. She wasn't even really named Julian. She walled herself into a small cell attached to St. Julian's Church in Norwich, England. For her, it was obvious that God was a mother. Jesus, Julian reasoned, had to be female, because who but a mother would break herself open and pour herself out for love of her children? Julian seemed obsessed with Jesus' suffering on the cross. In May of 1373, while sick in bed with what others thought was a mortal illness, she had 16 mystical revelations. Julian believed that Jesus did not only willingly endure the cross, he desired to suffer even more for us. She explained, he, being Jesus, very affectionately said these words to her, "If I could suffer more, I would suffer more. For if he could suffer more, he would, even if it were not necessary." Julian meditated on Jesus' role as mother. Christ's pangs of agony on the cross are a lot like labor pains. I look back on the very real pain that I suffered to bring my babies into the world, and I have no regrets. I would have suffered even more for their sake. I don't think that my friend Lisa regrets what she gave to her daughter either. There's a universal mother that lives in each of us, a part of us that wants to create and birth uncontrollable things in the world, a part that recognizes both the exquisite beauty of the world and our own potential for terrible destruction, a part of us that, because of our love, is vulnerable to the world and to our fears, and we know that this vulnerability can and does cause us incredible pain at times, but still we love. And it was still worth it, and it's all part of being human. For all of the gifts that mothering has taught me about what it means to be human, our culture seems to do a relatively poor job of nurturing mothers. This doesn't have to be the case. Agency for Native women has grown in part from the fact that even though social responsibilities are often divided along gender lines, masculine dominance is not a cultural value in their communities. These women do not view their work as lower status. They also understand power to be grounded in women's ability to create and to nurture life. Because Native principles link women's creative power to that of the earth, mothers' efforts must be reciprocated, not just simply taken from them. For a mother to continue providing, she must be mutually nourished and cared for, much as the earth must be cared for and replenished. From this belief system, Native mothers and the earth are to be both sources and recipients of care. The United States is only one of 5 countries in the entire world that offers no federal compensation guarantees for maternity leave. Among 11 developed countries, the United States has the highest maternal mortality rate and the only country that does not guarantee access to home visits by providers after the mother has given birth. Compared with any wealthy nation, the United States also spends the highest percentage of its gross domestic product on healthcare. I don't know why there's any surprise that to so many Americans, the earth is a resource from which we can just take continually. We treat our mothers the same way we treat our earth. You give, we will take. But in doing so, we undervalue the mother that lives in each one of us. We are seeking a wild and wise mother. We are not, cannot separate from her. Our relationship to this soulful mother is meant to turn and turn, to change and to change, and it is a paradox. This mother is a school we are born into, a school we are students in, a school we are teachers at, all at the same time and for the rest of our lives. Whether we have children or not, whether we nourish the garden, the sciences, or the thunderworld of poetics, we always brush against the wild mother on our way to anywhere else. And this is as it should be. Is motherhood fulfilling? Do you feel rewarded and satisfied when you are connected? Is there value in letting go? Can you accept your darkness and your anger? Can you live without always having control? Being open to great pain. I see this mothering spirit here at C3. I think supporting Felipe and his family is an act of mothering. I think Charity McMaster and this community's impulse to raise money and resources for Pastor Tim across the hallway after his house burned down is an act of mothering. I think Patty's offer to connect kids in South America with eclipse glasses comes from a spirit of mothering. You don't even have to call it mothering if you don't want to, but I'm telling you, it's because of my children that I woke up to these values. I could ignore them before because I could defeat my enemies with a clear goal and some self-determination. I could have gone on believing that I was a nice person. Motherhood does not have an end goal, but when I live into the traits of motherhood, I certainly live more fully. And in that way, I think motherhood is incredibly fulfilling. Mark Twain sums it up nicely. My mother had a great deal of trouble with me, but I think she enjoyed it. Yes, both can be true at the same time. Thank you.